This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. It's our weekly review of news from around the tri-state area, and we start today with Monday's attack on the campus of Ohio State University, where 11 people were injured before a campus police officer shot the attacker dead. And joining us from Columbus, our Cincinnati Inquirer government reporter, Jesse Balmert, and WOSU digital news editor, Gabe Rosenberg. And in the studio, WCPO.com, WCPO insider, multimedia journalist, Evan Millward. And you can join the conversation at 513-419-7100, email talk at WVXU.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Jesse, Gabe, and Evan, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.
Thanks for having us.
It's great to be here.
Let's start with what we do know at this point, because there was a lot of confusion initially about what happened. Jesse, what is the latest on this?
So, to your point of confusion, it was initially reported out as a possible active shooter situation, and that might have been because people heard gunshots in the area. But what ended up actually happening on Monday was Abdul Razak Ali Artan. He drove a vehicle onto a curb and hit a planter, hitting some students and other faculty in the area. And then after that, he got out with a butcher's knife and stabbed a few people. Less than a minute later, the officer, Alan Harushko, was there and ended up fatally shooting Artan. So that's what we found out a few hours later, but it was initially reported as a possible shooter situation.
Gabe, 11 people hurt. How are they doing? What's their status?
Pretty quickly on Monday, we found out that none of the injuries were going to be fatal. None of them were even that serious. A few people had to get surgery to close up wounds. One of the professors hit by the car had some bad injuries on his leg. He said he's returning to teaching today. Last I heard, there were maybe one or two people left in the hospital sort of under observation. But, we really haven't heard anything on that front, meaning sort of no news is good news on that. There was never really any sort of thought as soon as we've sort of found out, when the smoke cleared, that anyone was really going to be seriously hurt, which was very good.
And Gabe, the professor you're referring to, was that William Clark by chance?
Yes, that was William Clark. Yeah, he gave a press conference on Tuesday, Wednesday, basically just sort of giving an update about his injuries and, how he's doing, which is, sort of he was in good spirits.
And Jesse, the Inquirer wrote about this, about William Clark's comments. What was his reaction to all this?
I think all things considered, he was in pretty good spirits. He had a bit of a touching moment where he said he wanted to, place his arm around the officer who helped prevent further injuries or, potentially even something worse. So he did get a bit emotional at that point, but otherwise was just very appreciative of both the officer and the hospital staff and just appreciative that nobody was injured even more because of this incident.
I think didn't he joke, and we still beat Michigan at the end of that press conference?
He did. Wow.
Yeah, that Ohio, Ohio
Break
State's going to be fine. Yeah, they still beat Michigan, still a good school,
I think he did predict that they were going on to the national championship, so you heard it there first.
It does sound like he was in very good spirits. Tell us what we know at this point about the attacker, Abdul Artan. What about him? What do we know about him?
So we knew that he was a student at Ohio State, and he had transferred from Columbus State, which is the local community college. He was living on the west side of Columbus with his family, his mother, and I believe some of the other siblings.
Five siblings.
So he was also interviewed by the student newspaper at Ohio State, The Lantern, on I believe the first day of school, and was talking about feeling kind of left out or less able to pray openly on campus. So that was one piece of information that came out.
How much do we really know about what motivated him? I mean, that was – you're talking about that one piece of information where he felt uncomfortable about praying. Do they think that's what pushed him to this, or do they really have any idea at this point?
Authorities really don't know. You know, they're trying to be very cautious about not sort of connecting this quite yet before they have all the information. You know, there's a Facebook post that Artan did shortly before the attack that sort of, you know, was a bit of a sort of rant, angry sort of comment about sort of, you know, the U.S. getting involved sort of in, you know, the Middle East. But, you know, that in and of itself, you know, didn't really connect all the dots for them. But it sort of seems, you know, so far it doesn't look like he was acting with anyone or under the command of any, you know, they really don't know. I talked to sort of the director of the mosque that sort of held his funeral services yesterday. So the director of the mosque, Ahmed Ahmed, said that, you know, he had talked to the family and the family had no idea anything was going on. He dropped his siblings off at school like usual. The mom had no idea anything was going on until she had heard from authorities later that day.
Evan?
Oh, I was just going to mention that I guess the FBI won't say – they won't come out and call this terrorism. And I know a lot of folks are at least emailing us, why aren't you calling it terrorism? Call it what it is. But I think the FBI did was it Wednesday that they Columbus Police, it was either yesterday or Wednesday. They did come out and say that they believe he was at least inspired by Anwar al-Awlaki, who was sort of a leader in the caliphate movement, I guess. So they're connecting that a little bit, but they are not going all the way to use the word terrorism. Not yet. They may just whether it's they're not ready to do that yet, or if it doesn't really point to it. But yeah, I think there's a lot at play on his end.
They're being cautious. I mean, ISIS has said that they've claimed responsibility for this, but I guess
that's right. But you know, in all fairness, ISIS could come out and claim responsibility for anything.
Sure, it would behoove them to claim that in this case because it was such a horrifying act.
And ISIS has done this previously, and I know that you know the FBI sort of agent who's sort of helping with this investigation basically said, you know, ISIS does this a lot with these sort of like lone wolf attackers because you know if the person's dead, they can't refute the idea that they were involved with ISIS. So, you know, it sort of benefits ISIS's brand to claim all of these sort of unconnected people as their agents. But that's sort of a loose definition.
Yeah, and unfortunately, the only person who could tell us can't tell us.
Right.
Yeah.
Certainly.
513-419-7100 if you'd like to join our conversation. Let's talk to Derek in Madeira. Hi, Derek.
Do your guests feel that with the new administration, there may be more inspired attacks, if you want to call it that, without calling it a terrorist attack? Do you think their Muslims will feel more disenfranchised and they are maybe more likely to do something like this under a Trump administration?
That's a great question. And I feel like we've heard that concern expressed in the campaign even. But I don't know. I don't know. Yeah, I'll straight tell you. Yeah, I have no idea.
That's a tough one.
Yeah, I mean, Donald Trump has come out and tweeted a few times and said in speeches, and his supporters have said in speeches that, you know, this was, you know, placing the blame on Somali refugees who shouldn't be here, which, you know, the attacker was not even undocumented. He was brought in with his parents legally, you know. So I think...
And was he on any kind of a watch list or did he have a criminal record?
No, the FBI said that they basically had no information on him previously. This was not someone that they were, you know, looking out for. And, you know, the authorities said that, you know, talking to people around that there wasn't really any prior indicators that this would happen. So, you know, there's been a lot of charged rhetoric about, you know, refugees and, you know, Muslims and Somalis from sort of President-elect Donald Trump and other people sort of in that camp. But, you know, at the very least, Columbus Police have said, you know, we're concerned about retaliation against Somalis and Muslims in Columbus. And they're going to be watching out to make sure that there isn't sort of anyone – you know, trying to really seek revenge or anything like that. So that's been a concern, certainly.
And that, yeah, you know, go ahead, Jesse.
My colleague, Mark Carnute, on I think Monday, he spoke with a local Somali leader who said, you know, basically the timing of this isn't good because there is a lot of anti-Muslim, anti-immigrant, anti-refugee sentiment going around right now. And incidents like this can perhaps just fuel the fire against those people. So it's not great timing, but I think making those connections is just hard to do and perhaps problematic.
How big, Jesse, is the Somali community in Columbus? I've heard it's huge.
So it's actually the second largest Somali population in the U.S. after Minneapolis, I believe. So it is a pretty large population. I don't have an exact number.
Now, what's the extent of the investigation that's going on? What agencies are involved in this?
Columbus Police is taking the lead on both the investigation into the officer-involved shooting and also the initial assault with the car and the knife. So they're the lead agency, but I believe, I mean, the FBI, OSU Police, OSU Public Safety, Franklin County Sheriff's Office, and SWAT got involved to do some of the search, I believe. So,
you brought up an interesting thought. The weapon, the knife that was used in this, where did he obtain that knife?
Walmart, actually. The morning of, you know, he, as far as the authorities know, he bought a knife that morning at Walmart. Something happened over a few hours, and then it came to campus. That's one of the things that they're working to clear up.
So I guess at this point, they don't have any idea how long he was thinking about doing this, whether this was just a spur-of-the-moment attack or whether he had planned this. I guess they don't know that.
Yeah, and, you know, like I said, you know, the family has said, you know, Artan took his siblings to school that morning, like, you know, everything was normal. So that's definitely one thing that's on everyone's mind.
Gabe, I know when this initially happened, there were reports that somebody else was involved. I mean, that was just part of the whole confusion that was going on at that point. Do investigators have any idea at this point whether anybody else was involved? Have they ruled that out, or what's the status on that?
There's no evidence to suggest that anyone else was involved. You know, there were two people arrested on Monday in the confusion. You know, there was a whole thing at a parking garage that it was essentially in the sort of confusion around the shots being fired and, you know, this car driving up that, you know, people had sort of said, oh, there were people going into this parking garage. You know, they arrested two people and pretty much immediately released them with, you know, no connection. You know, there was only one person in the car. And, you know, there nothing to suggest that Artan was working with anyone or anyone else had helped plan this.
We will continue our conversation. You can join us at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Joining me this afternoon as we discuss Monday's attack at Ohio State University, from Columbus, Cincinnati Inquirer government reporter Jesse Ballmert and WOSU digital news editor Gabe Rosenberg, and in the studio, WCPO.com, WCPO insider, multimedia journalist Evan Millward. And you can join us at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Evan, what about the officer who was involved in this?
And he's got a Cincinnati tie. He's Alan Jarico is from Fairfield, and our friends at Ohio State, correct me if I get this wrong, I think he's only been on the force up there a couple of years. He went to Ohio State, but he's a Fairfield graduate. What's funny is I realized about a day later, I started seeing the story get shared, and I realized I had friends and coworkers who went to high school with this guy. And so I just started to talk to them. He was an athlete. Everyone I talked to said he was a sweet guy, really focused on his studies, very nice guy. And I had one friend tell me that this was exactly the profession that they thought he would get into because he was kind of had a servant's heart. So, you know, you don't want to get too wishy-washy, but they were like, you know what? We're not surprised he's being hailed as a hero now because that was the kind of guy that we thought he is. And I know, I think we spoke briefly to his family up there this week, and they didn't obviously didn't want to make too much of a statement. They kind of want to let him get back through. Obviously, he's on paid leave. That's the procedure. But they were pretty proud of him for stopping a clear and present danger threat here at Ohio State.
And Jesse and Gabe, he had the Cincinnati connection, but I also understand lots of ties to OSU as well, right?
Yes, he's a graduate of Ohio State University, I believe, in 2012. And while he was a student, he worked as a student safety officer there, too, which kind of help with the games and events and also taking students back from classes and so forth if they need a ride. Even while he was a student there, when he was studying to, you know, eventually become a police officer, he was engaged in active shooter training. And that is also something that the OSU Police Department does every year. A lot of police departments on campuses do after Virginia Tech.
And from what I understand, too, Gabe, he wasn't responding to the incident itself, was he? There was something else going on that drew his attention to that particular building.
Yeah, so it's a bit of sort of the oddity. One of the oddities that started this day was that totally unrelated, sort of a fire alarm, a gas alarm went off in this building, which is a material sciences and engineering building on campus. And which sent a bunch of people, including, you know, a professor, you know, professors and students sort of outside just to, you know, as a precaution. You know, I think that this alarm had also gone off on Friday, you know, something there was something just sort of, you know, a little glitchy about this, which sent a bunch of people onto the sidewalk, which at one point, you know, on one hand, it meant that there was a large crowd of people for someone to drive a car into, but at the same point, it meant that, you know, there was an officer at the scene checking out what was going wrong. So, you know, within a minute, he could be there. So it's a bit of sort of like good news, bad news with, you know, that sort of odd bit of start to the event.
And I actually talked with the OSU chief yesterday, and he said that Officer Hrushko volunteered to go on that call and that sometimes they don't even send a police officer to leaks like that, but they figured, oh, maybe there might be a traffic situation that a police officer should be there for. So, you know, the timing was very coincidental and helpful.
So when he arrived, he had no idea this was going on. He just pulled right into this and that's what he got involved in. That's amazing.
And he, you know, responded pretty quickly, which to the incident, you know, he sort of, I know there was screaming, there was yelling going on, and so, you know, he was right around the corner, sort of left right to that.
Yeah, I mean, think about it. This, all told, this lasted 1 to 2 minutes. I mean, he made split second decisions.
And this is after asking, you know, the Artan to, at, you know, at least once or twice, bystanders were saying, you know, to put down the weapon. So all of this played out, like you were saying, within about 2 minutes.
513-419-7100 to join the conversation. Let's talk to Kata in Walnut Hills. Good afternoon.
Hi, good afternoon. How are you?
Good, thank you.
So my question just revolves a little bit around some of, like, the politically charged discussion that's been going on. I guess, I don't know if it's a question or a comment, but I know that we've been kind of outlining this incident as a potential terrorist incident, but I find it interesting that when we look at other cases of young, immigrant or non-Muslim male students who've gone on shooting sprees, the discussion more turns to mental health. So could you just speak on, I guess, like, why the direction is headed this way, and if there's being any research done to see if it's more of a mental health issue, perhaps?
Okay. Gabe and Jesse, is that part of what they're probably looking at? I would think that's something they'd have to consider, is whether mental health issues played a part in this or not.
Yeah, and I think that's something that I've been curious about myself. I know I sort of asked the Moss director yesterday if that was sort of something that he had talked to the family about, and you know, it wasn't. But I think it's a little bit legitimate question, and certainly whether or not sort of a sort of lone attacker gets labeled as terrorist or mental health, you know, crazy or just sort of disaffected, it's absolutely connected to race. It's absolutely something dependent in very large part on the race and the origin of the attacker, and it's something that, you know, gets labeled pretty quickly, which is, I think, unfortunate on sort of multiple for multiple reasons.
So I think it's partially why police have been so hesitant to say this is terrorism, and they're saying he's inspired by these various things, and oh well, the Islamic State could take credit for any manner of things. So I think they've been very sensitive to that, and I think Ohio State has been very sensitive to not grouping all Muslim students or into one big group. But certainly there has been some politically charged rhetoric around this. I mean, I believe earlier this week our state treasurer tweeted about, looks like radical Islamic terror has come to my alma mater today. And he faced, some people thought, yeah, calling it out for what it is. Some people, there was a lot of blowback on that. So,
well, and as you were talking about earlier, the Somali students on campus, they're all very concerned about this, and it has them very worried about any possible backlash or what might happen to them because of this.
Absolutely. And, you know, this is something that Ohio State administrators, Columbus police administrators have all said that, you know, that's something that they're concerned about and keeping an eye on, which I know that sort of members of the Muslim and Somali communities, both in Columbus at large and in Ohio State, sort of are grateful for, because, you know, a lot of people are very aware that sort of these are the fingers that get pointed after events like this.
So what is the mood on campus as a whole since this happened?
Ohio State has sort of been offering counseling sessions and sort of vigils sort of all week, you know, checking in with people, making sure that they're doing all right. You know, these are your professors and your classmates that are going through this. And even if you yourself weren't involved, you know, that can be something that's traumatic and sort of lead to just being a little bit more hyper aware and tense. So Ohio State's been sort of dedicating resources to making sure that sort of their students can have counseling or someone to talk to if needed. There's been a lot of sort of vigils and gatherings for people to sort of reaffirm their support. You know, in the Ohio State Union, I went to see it the other day, there's just been big boards erected right in the middle of the student union where people can write messages of support and solidarity and love to each other and to, you know, the officer Hrushko and to the Muslims on campus, and sort of support to everyone. Just, you know, so you walk by and you see all these people sort of, you know, reaching out and making sure other students are okay. So, you know, the students I've talked to, you know, it's a bit weird, certainly, to try and go back to normal, but certainly could have been a lot worse.
Are they concerned this could happen again, Gabe?
Well, I believe this is the second such incident in a short amount of time in Ohio State or Columbus, right? Am I right about that?
There was a stabbing incident not that long ago up there, right? It wasn't at Ohio State. But it wasn't.
Yeah,
there was
the
estimates.
Yeah, there was a stabbing at Nazareth restaurant, I believe, earlier this year. But as far as the sentiment on campus, I grew up in Columbus and live in Columbus, covering the State House news here, and so I have friends who are instructors or who work very near to that location, and unfortunately, some of the sentiment is we're not entirely surprised that this is something that can happen on a college campus, and that's why they prepare so much for it. But I think there's a bit of unease, but most people are getting back to classes and just being attentive of their fellow students and faculty and staff.
It was somewhat telling, because about the only time I actually was in Columbus was very, very, very early Tuesday morning, through about noon Tuesday. And talking to students, even at that point, the students were telling me, like, this hasn't sunk in. I don't know when it's going to hit me. And I wonder, to Jesse's point, if maybe the gravity of it isn't going to hit because we see it so much. I mean, I had friends who work on the south side of campus who I texted immediately when news was starting to break about it. And they said, oh, it's on the other side of campus. It's fine. And that struck me as very interesting and maybe a little telling.
Yeah. How big is the campus, Jesse? I mean, this is huge, isn't it? It covers a lot of downtown Columbus.
Yeah, it's a fairly large campus. I'm not sure.
It's the largest one I've been on personally. Yeah. I mean, it's its own mini city. The professor the other day basically said, you know, this is a community of 60,000 people. There are plenty of cities smaller than this one, than this school. So in a sense, there was a bit of eventuality that something like this was going to happen. It happens on so many campuses across the country. And I think while it's really fortunate that, you know, no one besides the attacker died in this incident, no one was seriously injured, that sort of allowing people to sort of move on a little faster or sort of become adjusted more than it would in another situation. But, you know, I think people are realizing that at the way things are right now, this is maybe a little bit of the reality that we're living in.
Jesse, what comes next in the investigation? Do we have any idea where things head from here?
Well, for the shooting with the officer, Columbus Police is investigating that because the officer was an Ohio State police officer. And I think the policy just of the Franklin County prosecutor is to present all of those cases to grand jury. So that'll be the next step for that portion. The investigation into the assault by the student is somewhat cleared up by his death, but also they are doing a number of search warrants and investigating to the best they can why this happened.
They're also finishing – they still need to finish the autopsy report. They know why he died, but, you know, any looking into if there were any substances in his system, which we don't know yet – in any way, but that's obviously something they'll look into in addition to sort of continuing to sort of mine the internet to see if there are any other indicators or things that they might have missed or anything that might explain his motives or how he sort of came to decide this was the course of action.
Well, Gabe and Jesse and Evan, thank you so much for joining me this afternoon.
Thank you.
Really appreciate it.
Cincinnati Enquirer government reporter Jesse Balmert, WOSU digital news editor Gabe Rosenberg, and WCPO.com WCPO insider multimedia journalist Evan Millward. Coming up, President-elect Donald Trump pays a visit to Cincinnati, looking ahead to next year's election for Cincinnati mayor and city council, and Hamilton County homeowners will be getting more money back next year on their property taxes. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. We continue our review of local news with President-elect Donald Trump's visit to Cincinnati for a post-election rally. Joining us now, local politics reporter for the Cincinnati Enquirer, Jason Williams, and WVXU reporter and local host of All Things Considered, Bill Reinhardt. And Bill put together this audio montage from last night's event.
I'm here today for one main reason. To say thank you to Ohio. Thank you. Today we made history, and now the real work begins. That is the second reason that I'm here today. I'm going to discuss our action plan to make America great again. We're going to discuss. Although we did have a lot of fun fighting Hillary, didn't we? Okay. Right? But to succeed, we must enlist the effort of all Americans. For too long, Washington has tried to put us in boxes. They separate us by race, by age, by income, by geography, by place of birth. We spend too much time focusing on what divides us. Now is the time to embrace the one thing that truly unites us. You know what that is? America. America. It's America.
We were deplorable, and they're unreasonable.
So how do we move forward at this point?
I don't know. That's their problem. They gotta see the light like everybody else did here that elected Mr. Trump.
We're going to make joint decisions. We are, and the nice part, our victory was so great. We have the House, we have the Senate, and we have the presidency.
It really does prove that Trump can sit down and work with people of all different opinions and come to just to get one goal, to make America great again.
And I've been saying it to you for many months, but I'll say it one last time tonight. We are going to come together and make America great again. Thank you very much. Thank you, Ohio. Thank you.
Again, joining me now, local politics reporter for The Inquirer, Jason Williams, and WVXU's Bill Reinhardt. And Jason, it's kind of interesting. Donald Trump, as you note in one of your columns, he lost in Cincinnati and Hamilton County, yet he kicks off his victory tour at U.S. Bank Arena in Cincinnati. So why did he pick that spot? Any ideas?
Honestly, I believe it was really a matter of logistics. He was in Indianapolis most of the day, and U.S. Bank Arena was available, an open date that night or Thursday night. And quick, easy trip over from Indy, and you are in the Ohio borders, and certainly everywhere around Hamilton County in Indiana, Butler, Warren, and all northern Kentucky overwhelmingly went for Trump. So certainly the whole region is very, very much went for Trump. Hamilton County did not, but overall, greater Cincinnati did.
Yeah, was he doing some fence mending while he was here too? Was he meeting with Ohio GOP leaders maybe to do some fence mending?
He was, that was put together after the event was scheduled. So some of the top GOP leaders here in town put together an RNC fundraiser at the Queen City Club and brought a lot of top Ohio politicos together for that, and it sounded like it was a really positive event. And I commended in the column I wrote, I commended Trump for working to mend fences with the party, and certainly when you mend fences with the Ohio party, that's a big part of mending fences with the country.
But there's still Governor Kasich out there. Any sign that relationship's starting to thaw at all?
He did say last night. He being Trump, he took some swipes at Kasich during the rally, but then he did say that Kasich called to congratulate me. I don't know. It seemed like a little bit of sarcasm there, and sort of like, oh, he did congratulate me, but he hasn't really come around to me. It was sort of the message there. I don't see a thawing, to be honest with you. I think Kasich is standing his ground, and good for him.
Bill, what were your impressions from last night?
Well, it was very much like a campaign rally. At one point, I wondered, does he remember he's been elected? Because while he came out, he said, this is the thank you, this is the victory tour, this is where I'm going to lay out how we're going to do things. A lot of it was a lot of the rhetoric we heard during the campaign. We heard a lot of the familiar phrases, build that wall, drain that swamp, make America great again, destroy ISIS. And when he did... You know, he did acknowledge the election, and he did talk a lot about how he won, where he won, and he went after the press, which was kind of a signature move of his during the campaign. You know, criticizing the press for saying that he was not going to win, criticizing the pundits for saying, "Oh, he can't win North Carolina. He's not going to win Pennsylvania or Oklahoma. He's not going to break that blue wall." And the crowd ate it up every time.
Did he have much to say about the bridging this divide, the deep divide among the American voters?
Well, yes and no. He did say we're going to unite this country. People are not going to be divided for much longer, which he didn't really say how he was going to bridge that divide. He said people are very divided, but they won't be for very long. And someone on Twitter pointed out, wow, that sounds ominous. He talked about, you know, he's talked to Democrats and he believes they want to get on board, but he didn't give any specifics.
513-419-7100 if you'd like to join us. And you can also email talk@wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Let's talk to Dale in Latonia. Hi, Dale.
Hello. Nice program. I was there last night. And I'll use key words to summarize my feelings. I'll take the heat. Sitcom lovers, lottery players, brand name lovers, anti-intellectuals, sometimes bigots, mostly culturally insensitive. The divide was in front of everyone's faces. I counted one person of color in the crowd.
So, Dale, I'm wondering, are you willing to give Trump a chance, even though you might disagree with him? What are your feelings on that?
Of course I'm going to give him a chance. I pray and hope that the presidency will form him and shape him into a mature 70-year-old man. But the future remains to be seen. And frankly, I take heat now from my family members for being a liberal. And we laugh about it. I'm an educated man. I was in the United States Peace Corps 3 years. I wasn't a veteran. But these are scary times.
Dale, thank you for the call. We appreciate it. And Bill and Jason, what were your observations?
I did see a handful of African Americans in the stands directly behind Donald Trump. I saw a couple people outside in line waiting to get in. I didn't get a chance to talk to them to see if they were just there for the sake of curiosity or if they were there as supporters. I did see one young African American man walking around with a Trump sign that said, you know, make America great, and then he had handwritten underneath it, was America ever great? I didn't get a chance to talk to him, unfortunately, and there were some protesters inside. Towards the end of the speech, a couple of people unveiled a banner that said, stop Trump, no deportations. That was taken down pretty quickly, and they were ushered out. There was also, at the beginning, before the thing started, there were a couple of people with a big banner up in that same spot. The language was Chinese, I believe, and I'm trying to remember. I did take a picture of it, so I'm trying to find the picture to see what it actually said. No, I don't have the picture. So it was talking about peace, compassion, love, unity, I believe.
I was hiding under the table in the press pen because I was so scared when everyone was booing us. So I'm just kidding.
I got to ask you too. Is this whole, you know, one thing he's done a lot is to criticize the media, attack the media. Mm-hmm. I mean, is that going to work or is that going to backfire at some point?
I just think it's just going to continue to, you know, the line in the sand has been drawn, and certainly Trump is going to continue to dig in on that. And I think it's not a good thing. He needs to be transparent, and he, you know, the press is an easy scapegoat and always has been, even long before Facebook and Twitter. You know, the media is always blame the media. It's just a lot more prevalent now. And but you know, he needs to. I'm concerned about. And I was concerned about Hillary too, about transparency. As a big proponent of open government, That's the one thing that concerns me. You can call us dishonest and whatever, like, but you need to be transparent with the people because we're the go-between between the public, and we're just a conduit to the public.
The first time he did mention the dishonest press, everyone turned around and booed and called out CNN by name with a chant, which I shall not repeat here. But I noticed a big difference from previous rallies where the audience would boo the press pen. Lots of smiles, lots of big grins, as if it was all just a big joke. It's just all for fun. Hey, it's okay. We know. You guys are human, too. It's all fun. But during previous rallies, there was not that. There was animosity in those mm-hmm. in those chants and in those boos. This time, they're on the winning side, so they can feel a little gracious, I guess.
So where else is he going on this victory tour?
I didn't check his schedule. Like his schedule,
I think a lot of it's still up in the air.
Yeah, all week his schedule just had Cincinnati on it, and I didn't check it today or yesterday, so I don't know where the next stop is.
As of last night, Vice President-elect Mike Pence was going to be in New Orleans tomorrow. That was the only other scheduled event I saw as of last night.
But if I'm not mistaken, Jason, going on a victory tour like this, this is unprecedented. No president's ever done something like this before, have they?
Look back to Abraham Lincoln days.
Okay. Yeah,
they'd take a train and they'd stop in towns along the way and come out and give a speech and wave the flag. So I wouldn't say it's unprecedented. I think on the scale it's a little unusual, but I wouldn't call it unprecedented.
Yeah, certainly modern day. It's not been done by modern day presidents. But I think that we're going to continue to see him do this. I think this is he's in his sweet spot.
So once he's in office,
yeah.
He'll keep doing this?
Okay. Yeah, which would also be fairly unprecedented. He's in his sweet spot when he's standing on a stage amid his supporters and thousands of people and receiving all the adulation. And that's, man, he loves that. He eats it up. And, I mean, he doesn't have a trademark on ego in politics, so there's a lot of politicians that like that stuff, but I think that's where he's able. I think how he's fancied it is that, hey, this is the media is saying what they want to say, but I'm coming right to you, the people, and I'm coming to your arenas across the country, and I'm going to speak directly to you. And I think he'll continue to do that.
Well, we get finished with the presidential election, and boy, we get to roll right into something else for Cincinnati, the 2017 campaign for mayor. And for city council. So how is the city council race shaping up, Jason? What's that looking like?
Well, right now, there's a lot of people behind. It's always at this time of year where people just start talking, hey, I'm going to run, and you hear lots of names. And I think there certainly are a lot of people who are seriously going to run at this point, but it's still very early. And I think there are people who say they're going to run, but they don't realize what it entails. And you still got to raise a lot of money, especially if you're a non-incumbent and you don't really have much of a name. Like, you've got to raise a lot of money to be able to compete and to try to get that Democratic endorsement. If you don't get, like, in the city council, if you really don't get that Democratic endorsement, that's really detrimental to your chances of winning.
So if I understand correctly, too, there are three of the council seats are probably going to be open. Kevin Flynn's not going to run again. Yvette Simpson, of course, is running for mayor, mm-hmm. so her seat would be open. And then I'm not sure who the third was, but I've heard three.
Charlie Winburn. Term limited out.
So he's term limited. So we've got three seats that are actually open, and the six incumbents, of course, were the other seats.
Yep. I think all the incumbents will be fine. The non-incumbents, I see Greg Landsman, who was a Mount Washington resident, worked for Ted Strickland's administration, and was really the guy who made the whole preschool promise levy. It's not preschool promise; I mean, it's the preschool levy that was a part of CPS's levy earlier this month. Really spearheaded putting this whole big collaboration together, and it passed just easily. And I think there are a lot of people that were surprised by that. And he gets a lot of credit for bringing a lot of different people together and groups together to make that happen. So I think he's certainly among the non-incumbents one of the leading favorites.
Now, you talked about people who might be running and the considerations they have to make. Yeah. You wrote about this recently. State Representative Alicia Reese, what's the possibility that she might be running for council?
Well, she's term limited out of the state house, and she's a former vice mayor and ran for mayor a decade ago. She's term limited out of the state house in 2 years, and so she's looking for at her future, and I think there are I think right now she's exploring options, and I think she's looking at potentially just looking at it. And I know people jump on me like, oh, she could never win a statewide race because the Republicans dominate. But I think she's just looking at it, exploring those options right now. I ultimately think that she'll end up running for council, and that's just my assessment of it. And, you know, potentially run for mayor in 2021.
Now, if we look at the mayor's race, there had been some rumors about Yvette Simpson that she might drop out of this. What's the case here? Are the rumors true or untrue, or what are you hearing?
Completely untrue. I talked to Yvette a couple days ago, and I wrote my column this week about this, and completely untrue. And this is the second time, really, a big rumor has gotten going, and it's. I don't like writing about rumors so much, but in my column I can do that. And this one was prevalent enough that, yeah, I certainly should address this. But absolutely not. She's staying in. That is not her personality. She really overcame a tough childhood, and yeah, she's just a dynamic person in that she's always accomplished a lot and going to law school and a two-term council member. And she's hanging in there, and she's gonna fight it out.
So how intense do you think this mayor's race is going to be?
Very, to put it in a word. It's going to be, you want to hope that it's not going to be nasty, but it's going to be nasty. And on our scale here, I think it's
from 1 to 10,
10.5. I just think it's going to be – I think, you know, we just came out of this nasty national election, and I think you'll see just a lot of elements of that, not some of the personal nastiness and the disparaging of certain groups of people, but I think you'll see a lot of attacking of records and personalities and that kind of thing.
And, Bill, we need to hit our last topic before we run out of time, and that the Hamilton County homeowners are going to be getting some more money back next year on their taxes.
A little bit.
A little bit more. So what's behind this?
Hamilton County commissioners approved fully funding the property tax rebate for the next year. The rebate was created to kind of offset the half-cent sales tax created in 1996 to fund the stadiums, the Paul Brown Stadium and Great American Ballpark. And as, you know, to help get voters to approve those, they said we're going to give property owners in Hamilton County
a rebate on
their
taxes.
We're going to give you a rebate on your taxes, and so you're not actually going to get a check if you own a house in Hamilton County. It's just going to be applied toward your property taxes. For people in the city of Cincinnati, that's going to be roughly $86. For folks outside of Cincinnati, depending on what your property tax rate is, it'll range anywhere from $51 to $128.
So in previous years, they haven't given the full rebate, have they?
No, because the sales tax fund that takes care of the stadiums hadn't been doing too well. This year, it's looking a lot better. And because commissioners were able to refinance the debt on the stadiums, that sales tax fund is actually doing okay.
Yeah, man. Now, who supported this on commission? It wasn't all three. It was just
no,
two.
No, Todd Fortune and Chris Munzel both voted for full 100% on the property tax rebate. Dennis Dieters said, no, let's kind of keep it where it is and see where things go. Let's be a little more conservative. We don't know what's going to be coming up in the next year. We've got the state, the Medicaid. It's a very complicated portion of it. We basically don't know what's going to be happening in the next year, so let's just hold off.
Be cautious, yeah. Well, thank you so much for joining me, Jason and Bill.
Thank you.
Local politics reporter for the Cincinnati Inquirer, Jason Williams, and WVXU reporter and local host of All Things Considered, Bill Reinhardt. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition. You can find archives of our programs at WVXU.org. Pete Reitmeier was the producer for today's show with help from Jim Nolan. Belinda Kai was the assistant producer. Dave Shermer was the technical director. I'm Mark Haney.